In the world of Ethereum, improvement proposals play a critical role in shaping the future of the blockchain. The standardization helps bring innovation, and different applications are evolved within the Ethereum ecosystem. So whether you are a seasoned Ethereum developer, a building blockchain enthusiast, or just curious about the inner working of the most influential blockchain platform, this episode is for you. Welcome back to PPenny, where we learn about an Ethereum improvement proposal with the author to follow the motivation, specs, and utility in the ecosystem. This is episode 124 brought to you by Ethereum Cat Herders, and I'm your host, Pooja Ranjan. Today, we will deep diving into EIP 5069, EIP Editor Handbook. Originally documented in May 2022, EIP 5069 is a documentation of roles and responsibilities of EIP editors to support EIP standardization process. Co-authored by PandaPeep and I, the proposal received major update to include organizational structure, decision-making process, and other EIP editor odds and ends. We are joined by Sam Wilson, the co-author and the mind behind the charter. Welcome back to PPenny, Sam.
Happy to be here.
For people who aren't aware, Sam is an EIP editor and author of multiple proposals. He joined us earlier to talk about EIP 5757, process of approving external resources, EIP 3074, and the state of execution layer specs. Really happy to have him back and looking forward to learn about the upcoming changes in the editing process after the recent EIP-ERC split. Sam, may I ask you to kick off the talk with a brief introduction of your current engagement with the Ethereum ecosystem? What other projects are you engaged with when you are not doing the EIP editing?
Sure. So I'm with the Ethereum Foundation. I work on, obviously, EIP editing, and that probably takes up the majority of my time. Then my second project is the EELS, or execution specification. So that's kind of a project where we document how the Ethereum execution layer works, and it's written all in Python. It's a pretty cool project. I'd recommend you check it out. I also work on All Wallet Devs, which is a Discord server and group that tries to get developers from all Ethereum wallets together in one room so that they can talk about different processes and work on standardizing things together. That kind of grew out of my EIP editing role. And I guess the last big thing that I work on is WTF, or the Wallet Testing Framework, and Nikki is my partner on that project. So Wallet Testing Framework is kind of a set of tools and tests for ensuring the quality of Ethereum wallets, and we have a cool little demo site and everything for that, and for All Wallet Devs, you can check us out on All Wallet Dev. That's our website for that. And unless there's anything else, I'll get into a little bit about EIP 5069.
Awesome. That's really wonderful. It's really lovely to know your engagement with other things that is coming out of EIP editing and perhaps will be supporting the overall ecosystem with a standardization process. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into the EIP today.
Sure. So I want to preface this a little bit and say there are some parts that are currently active, like our mission, who are the EIP editors and how do we make decisions? And there are some ideas that we have for the that I have for the future, and that's kind of the direction that I want the EIP process to go in. So just to make it clear, the first half, well, first three quarters of this presentation are going to be about EIP 5069 as it is today, and then the last little bit is going to be about where I want to take it in the future. So let's jump in a little bit here, and let's talk about the mission of EIP editors. So EIP 5069 kind of defines what EIP editors do, who we are. And this sentence right here, we, the EIP editors, maintain a repository of documents related to the Ethereum protocol and its ecosystem, just sums up what we're trying to do. EIP editors have documents and we provide them for people. And that's basically all we do. So that's the core of what we want to provide. That's the service we provide for Ethereum. And yeah, the rest of the document kind of describes how we accomplish that goal. There are three bullet points, like subtasks, I guess, that describe in more detail what we try to do. So we want to publish proposals. So that's literally taking a markdown file that somebody has written and putting it up on the internet and making sure that it sticks around for the lifetime of Ethereum. We aren't like ISO. We don't charge access to our proposals. We guarantee that they will be free forever. It'll also be free to contribute EIPs. It's a very open and decentralized process. So we don't want, a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of money, a lot of fees, none of that. But the second big kind of goal we want to accomplish is to facilitate discussion. We don't just want to provide these static documents. We also want to provide a place for people to talk about these documents and come together as a community and agree on what we want to do. This forum has to be open for anybody who wants to discuss civilly. And for that, we use the Fellowship of Ethereum Magicians Forum. That's been great so far. And our third kind of major task that we do is uphold quality. So we try to read proposals and make sure that they're understandable, that they're implementable, that they aren't just like a pile of garbage that somebody threw up on the website. We want to make sure that, these things are at least as objectively as possible, are real useful proposals. On the other hand, there's a list of things that we don't do because people ask us to do all sorts of things and we don't do these things. So we don't decide winners. This is a very common misconception. Somebody thinks the number of times that somebody's reached out and said, oh, we want to hurry up and get our proposal merged or else somebody else's proposal will get merged first. That doesn't really matter. Even if there are two proposals that accomplish the same goal, we'll publish both of them. We don't really try to decide which proposal's better, if one, like the ecosystem should go one way or the other. We don't even believe that there really is one true, like correct path for Ethereum to go on. So we allow people to publish competing proposals. We also don't assert correctness. EIP editors have no expectation of being technical experts. We want them to, be good at English and reading and writing, but we don't really expect them to know, the ins and outs of Solidity and whether, certain like smart contract has a vulnerability. So EIP editors don't assert correctness, and publishing a proposal is not an endorsement or a statement of technical soundness. The third thing that comes up a lot that we get asked to do and that we don't is manage people. We don't track implementation status. We don't have a list of which clients have implemented which EIPs. We don't keep track of a list of like reference implementations for proposals. Like if you go to the ERC20 proposal, you will not see a list of all 360,000 different tokens that are on there. We don't want to do that. We also don't schedule work, and we very much have nothing to do with fork contents. We also don't track registries. So what is a registry? That's kind of like a list of things. So transaction types are one example of a registry. We don't have a list of every single transaction type, and we don't plan to ever have a list of every single transaction type. Each proposal that introduces a transaction type has to be its own proposal. And the reason why we have this rule is we want everything to become immutable. We want things to become finished at some point in time so that we don't have to touch them anymore. And these kind of like lists never will get finished. They have to keep being updated. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, we don't provide legal advice. We're not lawyers. We have no knowledge of copyright. We have no knowledge of patents. And while we, might occasionally make comments on those kind of topics, we're novices. We're not experts. Don't trust us. And if questions like that ever come up, talk to a lawyer. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about what EIP editors are, who can be a member, and kind of like the structure of our organization. Not that there is much of an organization, but So EIP editors are responsible for governing the EIP process itself, electing a keeper, and stewarding proposals. So that means, EIP editors write this document. We talk about this document. A lot of that goes on. We elect somebody who's responsible for certain extra tasks, and I'll get talk about that a little bit later, and stewarding proposals. And that's kind of like the idea that EIP editors, help authors move their proposals through different statuses, and that's what we do. So specifically about membership, anybody can apply to be an EIP editor. If you are interested in being an EIP editor, please come out to our EIP IP meetings that happen biweekly, talk to us on Discord, or even just make a comment on our GitHub. The general requirements for EIP editors are a strong belief in the mission, which you can see in E5069 or earlier in this presentation. You have to be able to read and write English fairly well. It's not like to a like an English professor degree, but reasonably well. You have to actively read and critique EIPs and the pull requests that come in. And you have to participate in governance. So that means you have to come out and give your opinion on, whether or not we should change this rule or whether or not, we want to add somebody as an EIP editor. You have to participate in those kind of discussions. That said, the final decision on whether or not a new applicant can become an EIP member is up to the current EIP editors, and they may have more strict requirements. For example, Light Client likes to have a history of contributions to the repository. And while that isn't a formal requirement, you're not likely to get permission from Matt to join if you don't have that kind of history. We're talking now a little bit about the structure of EIP editing. We have some number of EIP editors. I think right now we have seven, but don't quote me on that. And these EIP editors, like I said, participate in governance and review proposals. To become an EIP editor, you need to have the unanimous consent of all current EIP editors. And you can be removed, and again, more about that later. And then there's one special kind of role that's in addition to the EIP editors, and that is the keeper of consensus. And this is probably the heart EIP 5069. The keeper of consensus has the power to stop discussion on a topic. One of the biggest problems we had in the past as EIP editors is that we like to argue. We are very opinionated people, and it is very easy to spend hours and hours discussing the minutiae, on dashed chain versus on without a dashed chain. And these kind of decisions would take up so much of our time. So I proposed creating this role, keeper of consensus, who has the power to decide when conversation has finished and there's no new information being proposed. And that's what the keeper of consensus, their goal is to keep, everything time-boxed and discussion of a reasonable length. They kind of have a second role, which is if a decision has been settled in the past, oftentimes they would come back up again. So the keeper of consensus can just say, we're done. We talked about this, 3 years ago, and we're not going to talk about it again. So those are really the only two powers that the keeper of consensus has over a regular EIP editor, and that's determining when rough consensus has been reached and determining whether to reopen an already settled discussion. The keeper of consensus is appointed by majority vote and has to be an EIP editor. So the next big section of EIP 5069 is how we make decisions. For decisions that are unlikely to be controversial, an EIP editor may choose whatever option they deem appropriate in accordance with our mission. So what that kind of means is that if you're editing a proposal, you're reading something and somebody, I don't know, they added an extra section. If you believe that section is merited as an editor, you believe that section is merited and that the other EIP editors won't disagree with you, you can just make that decision. So each individual EIP editor has a lot of individual freedom in how they edit proposals and in making decisions. But when things are controversial, so for example, editing a final proposal, that's something that comes up quite often and is always controversial. We have a formal process for making those kind of decisions. So, yeah, some common examples of making of informal decisions is, certain spellings between words, whether a reference implementation is too big, and whether the category for a proposal is correct. So those kind of things come up all the time, and it's just much easier if editors can make those decisions on their own without having to go through the formal process. On the other hand, we do have a formal process because a lot of decisions do end up being controversial. So every formal decision begins with what's called a call for input. And this is a standard template, like what'll happen in the vote or in the decision. So in this example here, it's do we merge a particular pull request? And if everybody agrees with it, a new EIP is created. And if it's rejected, no new EIP is created. There's three different methods for making decisions, and that method has to be chosen in the call for input. And each call for input has a deadline of 30 days. So you post it, EIP editors have 30 days to comment on it, and then the call for input gets closed. So that's kind of the structure that we're going with for our formal decision-making process. So to make a decision, you have to reach quorum. Let me just move my little window here. There we go. So within 30 days of the call for input, so within the 30 days deadline that I mentioned earlier, decision can only be reached if all EIP editors have expressed their opinion. So that means everybody has the chance to say, whether they agree, they want to go ahead, they want to wait, or whether they disagree with it and they want to reject it entirely. So we have 30 days so that everybody has a fair period of time to get their comments in. After 30 days, the decision is made based on whoever happened to respond. So if after 30 days, let's say I didn't reply to a call for input, that doesn't mean that the call for input just fails. The decision is made without my input. And that kind of deals with the problem we were having where, on one hand, EIP editors would complain that they didn't know a decision had been reached or that there was a decision in progress. So that's why we have this 30-day window. And then on the flip side, decisions would just stall because somebody hadn't answered. So having a 30-day deadline gives us like a hard limit on how long we have to wait. And because everybody who's an active EIP editor has agreed to this process, I think 30 days, we've all agreed, is a reasonable timeline for that. So there are four different types of formal decisions. I said three earlier, my mistake, there's four. The first one is adding a new EIP editor, and that requires the consent of every current EIP editor. Removing an EIP editor, on the other hand, requires everybody's consent except for the person being removed, which kind of makes sense. Electing a keeper of consensus, that's done just by a vote. The person with the most votes wins. That one's pretty simple. Everything else, on the other hand, is rough consensus. And that's where things get messy, and that's where they get fun. So rough consensus does not require that all EIP editors agree. Instead, it requires a general sense of agreement. So that means, you know, if me, Matt, and Panda are, or Gavin, sorry, are all in favor of a particular proposal, and we have Gajinder saying, absolutely not, we can still move forward because we have kind of a rough consensus. And that's kind of the process that the IETF uses, and that's the process that we're using as well. So it's important to note that 51% of editors does not mean that rough consensus has been reached. And 99% of editors, you know, agreeing with a proposal is well beyond rough consensus. Rough consensus lies somewhere in between, and it's up to the keeper of consensus to determine when it has been reached. That's a very tricky thing to do. It's very easy to just degrade to majority wins, which is something that we don't necessarily want. There's kind of a risk with the tyranny of the majority where people get ignored and overruled. And that's definitely something we want to avoid. And that's why every EIP editor is entitled to have their opinion heard and understood before the keeper makes that determination. So that kind of a rule is there to protect people, to make sure they have a chance to express themselves, but also make sure that the process can move forward and that we can actually make changes. So I'm going to jump a little bit here into the EIP-ERC split. I have no idea anything about this. I can't answer any questions about it. I can tell you that it happened. I can tell you that the build system doesn't work very well. There's a guide. There's a link right there. Talk to Lightclient or PandaPip if you want more information. I had nothing to do with this. I wash my hands of it. Yeah, so moving on. I want to talk a little bit about the future. So again, let me preface this another time here. This is not guaranteed to happen. This is not written down anywhere yet. This is all stuff that I would like to see happen. And, you know, we'll see if it does. But I would like to introduce a concept of working groups. You may have heard me talk about them before as topic groups. We dropped that name. They're called working groups now. So a working group is a group of experts working together to achieve a specified goal or goals. So in this case, an example of a working group would be a working group dedicated to writing wallet standards. Yet the people on that working group would be developers of wallets. So those are experts working on a specific goal. So some points about working groups. They're self-organizing. So a group of people has to get together. It's not like EIP editors are going to like point at random people on the internet and be like, you are part of a working group now. They have to get themselves together. They are responsible for a subset of proposals. So that means a wallet working group would obviously only deal with wallet-related proposals. You could have a cryptography-related working group that deals with cryptography-related proposals, or a zero-knowledge working group. And they would be have experts as members. So you would have actual zero-knowledge people working in their working group, as opposed to EIP editors who really have no technical knowledge whatsoever. Each working group is focused on specific topics. And the working group that has the most specific topic for a proposal is the one that proposal goes into. So for example, if you had an ERC working group, which would contain all proposals related to smart contracts, and you have a DeFi related working group, a proposal that's dedicated to a DeFi topic, even though it is a smart contract, would go into the DeFi related working group. They're also not necessarily statically defined. So a working group can spring up for a couple of months, work on their topics. Let's say they have a family of EIPs. And then once they're done writing those EIPs, that working group can disband and hand over ownership of those proposals to the EIP editors. And this is really useful because, you know, sometimes people get together and build, like, are very passionate about a particular topic. And sometimes, you know, there's just a general vague sense of agreement of cooperation, like ERCs. So having the ability to pop in and pop out, that's going to be great for making sure that people who are passionate have a chance to work on these proposals. Now, each working group has a separate membership from EIP editors, so not necess so the ERC working group might not have any EIP editors on it, or it might be entirely made of EIP editors. We don't know. It's going to depend on each individual working group to set up how their membership works. Same for governance. EIP editors use rough consensus, but that doesn't mean that working groups have to use rough consensus. They can use majority votes. They could, you know, fight to the death to make decisions, whatever they want to use. Here are a couple ideas for working groups. And again, these don't exist yet, and I don't know who would be on these working groups, but these are the first six that I kind of envision existing based on my experience as an editor. Core proposals would basically inherit the ones that exist now in the core category. They would be things that affect client software and affect the consensus of the network itself. We'd also have ERCs, which exists today, so they would basically be unchanged, and they would deal with smart contracts and application layer proposals. We also have this meta category today, which is kind of a little confusing. We'd move that into the EIPs working group. So that would be a working group dedicated to EIPs themselves. And that's where we would move things like the editor handbook and working group charters. So that would be documents describing the EIP process. There's quite a few people who are interested in forming a layer two working group. They want to get together and make roll-up specific proposals, talk about certain precompiles they want to introduce, and make sure that, you know, a contract written for Optimism also works on Arbitrum. We also have DeFi. DeFi is a huge topic in Ethereum. There are tons and tons of proposals that are dedicated to lending and borrowing and swapping. So being able to have a dedicated group of experts that could actually look at these smart contract standards and decide whether or not they're feasible, that would be great. And, you know, coming out of my work with all wallet devs, we also would have a wallet working group, and this would be great to standardize things like 433 ERC 4337 endpoints, and, you know, finally being able to push through capabilities and handshakes. And there are a lot of topics that wallets are very excited about, and it'd be great to have a working group for them. That pretty much brings me to the end of my presentation on working groups and everything else. So I will hand the floor over to Pooja for questions.
Thank you for the talk, Sam. It was really interesting to learn about the present do's and don'ts and the process that may be expected in the future. It was kind of smart to keep yourself distant from the repo split, but as an editor, I know you would be asked questions irrespective of your position you would like to hold with respect to split. Well, it was good to know on the distinction of working group on a high level. Perhaps we will take a few more questions to understand and dig a bit deeper in this. I would like to understand, like, the proposed working group that you have mentioned here. The membership, as you mentioned, would be depending upon the individual working group. Is it something that could be facilitated by EIP slash ERC editors for the time being, so we onboard at least one member for each working group and then hand over the responsibilities towards them?
Yeah, exactly. So for core and ERC and EIPs, for sure, they'll because they already exist today and the EIP editors already handle those proposals, it makes sense to have the, you know, seed or initial members of those working groups be the EIP editors. But over time, they'll be able to diverge. For things like Layer 2 and DeFi and wallets, those aren't things that are currently overseen by EIP editors. So I think we'd expect or hope to get a group of interested people from those fields applying to become a working group.
Another related question, like I saw, it was core ERC and EIP. You mentioned about meta EIPs. However, there are a few other interface networking and informational. Would they be part of ERC, EIP, or core?
So that very much depends on the individual proposal. So, for example, there are a lot of meta proposals that are describing hard forks. So I'd move those into the core working group. The informational EIPs would very much depend on the specific content of them, whether they're dealing with core or application layer stuff. Networking would definitely go in with core. If the networking doesn't work, you can't reach consensus. So that definitely fits into the core category better than it does anywhere else.
That sounds like core and ERC will have almost the same level of subcategories within themselves.
Exactly.
Except it would be depending upon which users they are trying to reach out to, application layer or the protocol layer.
Exactly, yeah. So one goal of this organization that I've been trying to do, or this categorization rather, is to make it easier to determine if something is a networking EIP or if it's a core. A lot of wallet-related EIPs went in under interface when they technically should have been in ERC. So, you know, a lot of those things we're going to try and sort out and make it more clear where proposals belong.
One other question with respect to working group. You did mention the governance, the managing of the working group will totally depend upon the users there. They will decide what can be the process of decision-making or maybe deciding anything at all. Do you think it will be documented on a high level in this EIP 5069 just for the community to maybe follow or helping out begin the working group?
Yeah, so as part of the application process for becoming a working group, you'll have to fill out what I've been calling a working group charter, which I actually have a description of here. Let me see if I can find it, because I can give you kind of an idea of what it looks like. There it is. Okay. So this is the working group charter for the EIP's working group. So it is a charter that describes how charters will look. Bit of recursion there. So every working group is expected to have something that looks like this, where you define your statuses the same way that EIP1 does now. You define what categories end up in, or what preamble fields end up in your header. So working group, status, all those kind of things. They're all going to be defined in here. And then you have your required sections like introduction, membership, all these things. So every working group charter will have a workflow section, a proposal section, a membership section, a making decision section. And these will all be cataloged inside the EIP's working group. Yeah, so that's kind of how that's going to work. I hope that answers your question.
Definitely. And it, I hope, will help many people understand if they are interested to be a part of working group, what would be their roles and responsibility kind of thing, as well as how they would be working within that. On a high level, do we see the EIP same preamble, same structure, and we could be using one EIP template for documentation, or do we see this can vary depending upon the working group or depending upon the categories of proposals?
It's absolutely going to vary depending on the working group. For example, the EIPS working group, this meta one here, has a very different set of proposal types than a core one, because they're documenting different things. The only thing that's going to be the same between them all is a few of the header fields that we use for the bots. And then other than that, it's going to be up to the working group to define their templates. Hopefully they'll stay relatively similar. I don't expect to see, vastly different formatting. I expect them all to be marked down and that kind of thing. But there will be differences.
Interesting. Maybe respective editors would be able to share more information on that with respect to the community, so people could know how to follow this new style or the new documentation of any proposal with respect to the working group. Is there any expected timeline? As you mentioned, it would be coming up in future. This hasn't been decided yet. Do we see any time frame by which we can have the new version, the working group version, on?
So I'm working on a prototype right now, so I don't want to make the same mistakes that the EIP ERC split had. I want the tooling to work from day one. I want everything to be smooth for everybody. So once I finish building the prototype, probably within a month or so, I'll be able to share it with the editors. And if they all like it and agree with it, it'll be another 30 days after that. So probably within 3 months, if everything goes well and people don't hate it. So yeah.
Right. Considering this is year end, we should be good by end of quarter one to kind of have.
I would hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good to know. I mean, at least we have a timeline in mind, so people would get enough time to follow the changes and be prepared for the upcoming process. I'm a little bit curious, like with this change, some of the things will be updated on the handbook, right? How do you think that it will improve the efficiency or maybe the quality of EIP ERC editing? Is it going to be the same thing for both side, depending upon the changes of the structure? But other than that, will the actions performed by editors are going to be the same for EIP and ERC editing processes?
So I think this kind of creates like a two-tiered structure where you'll have the working group members and the EIP editors. I'm kind of hoping that we will get a lot more working group members that are interested and passionate. And because they work on their own little window of the EIP editing thing, I think we can, be a little bit more generous in handing out these memberships. I'm not Just because we need to be very careful when we add a new EIP editor that they're aligned with the values of the current EIP editors. So we're very hesitant to accept new people. But with working group members, there's a lot more freedom. It's a lot more decentralized. And I think it'll be a lot easier to get interested people contributing. And I think it'll make the whole EIP process a lot faster. At least I hope it will.
With this evolving process, we hope to get some feedback in due course. How do we see that to be incorporating? Say, for example, we do have associates, editor associates, and if they are getting involved with the process right from day one of the EIP and ERC split, and they come up with their ideas, where do you think it can be discussed, and how do we see the feedbacks being incorporated in any form of documentation that we maintain?
I'm not too sure. I'm hoping that we can be more flexible with this kind of a structure and we can integrate what people would change a lot easier. I mean, we'll be able to give control to working groups for their entire process. If they don't want to have a stagnant status, they don't have to have a stagnant status. So there's a lot more freedom in defining how proposals move. So hopefully that'll lead to people making more useful changes to the process. But I can't really say how it's going to turn out.
I understand this is too early for all these questions because most of the things are based on speculation, like what we will see the response will be in accordance to that. Just out of curiosity, so far, irrespective of type and categories, we maintain, I think, seven statuses, all right, from draft to stagnant, withdrawn, final, review, last call, all these. And will this not be same with respect to working group, or are we planning to have these statuses constant?
So with working groups, you'll be able to define your own statuses. And kind of the motivation behind that is core will have like draft finished and then deployed on the network. And those will basically be their only statuses. Whereas like ERCs will have like last call. I can imagine the wallet networks having a beta phase where they're encouraging people to try it out. So the statuses are going to be defined by the working groups, and the only requirement is that they have at least one mutable status, like draft, and one immutable status, like final, and then they can do whatever they want inside of that framework.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to just understand this. Like by standardization, I think in my mind, the first thing that comes up is we have same process. There could be a little bit of difference with respect to types and categories, but if we are talking about different working group, in my mind, the standardization process should be same. The way they want to adopt the process could be different. So is there any specific reason why do we want to give this flexibility for statuses? Why we cannot have like four or five fixed statuses that would be used as per the guideline provided by different working group?
So I don't have a specific reason for it. I know that some of the louder core devs have asked for more freedom in defining their process, and that's something that Greg has asked for as well. Greg is always saying that, we should have just draft and final, and I wanted to give that freedom to working groups. I expect most of them will just inherit the same process we have today, but who knows? If somebody wants to make just like a in progress and done, and those are the only two statuses, then I don't see why we should stop them from doing that.
Right, I understand. Most of the things will be discussed in future EIP meetings where we will be getting to discuss each of these working groups. Another question, which is kind of for you because you have been working hard for this charter. What were some of the biggest challenges you faced while creating this charter?
Getting buy-in from everybody was the biggest challenge. So I had originally written one document that proposed both, changing our decision-making process, so introducing the keeper of consensus and all that, and made working groups at the same time. And that was impossible to get through. I don't think I've ever seen people disagree as much as with that. So we had the stripped down version, which only, has a formal decision-making process, and that seems to have been working pretty well. Though I'd like to check with the other editors at some point to see if they're happy with it. Yeah, what else was a problem? I mean, just writing it. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not involved in government. So writing organizational charters and documents describing processes is difficult. And I hope I made this one clear enough, but it's an evolving document, so we can always change it if it isn't.
Of course we can. And thank you so much for all the effort. As we know, the document status living is provided because we want to keep it improved every certain period of time. And we hope that as we move forward with this split and with getting in the working group, we will keep on updating this document.
That's the goal, yeah.
Very well. This is almost time to wrap up. What advice would you give to editor associates or someone interested in becoming an EIP ERC editor or contributing to the Ethereum ecosystem?
Sure. So contributing to the Ethereum ecosystem is probably the easiest. Read proposals when they show up in the repository, leave comments on their discussion threads. That is super useful, especially if it's something that you know about. If you're an expert on NFTs, take a look at NFT related proposals, leave comments. It helps editors a lot. To people interested in becoming editors or associate editors, the biggest thing is to just leave reviews on people's proposals. It takes us a long time to get through them, and they often come in faster than we can review. So if by the time we get to them, the minor issues have all been taken care of, that is a huge, huge thing for us, and it'd be great if you can do that. And that'll also make it easier for people to see that you're contributing and that you're aligned with the process. So if you apply to become a full EIP editor, having that history is really important.
That's a valuable piece of advice. As Sam has been mentioning again and again, having history is very important. So if you ever see yourself to be contributing as an EIP editor in future, try to start following the repository and make contribution, no matter how small it is, but please make contributions.
Yeah, exactly.
Sam Wilson, I appreciate you taking out time to provide an overview of current EIP ERC process, share about editorial involvement and support for the new and existing EIP ERC authors in the ecosystem. We look forward to seeing this proposed process being adopted and followed by the community to be able to add more unique standard to the Ethereum repositories. On this note, thank you our YouTube viewers for watching, ECH podcast subscribers for listening and following this special episode on EIP editing. Check out the links in the description to learn more about other proposals and network upgrades. Should you have any question on this or any other topic, let us know at ETHcatHerders Discord. We'll be back with another interesting talk. Till then, keep sharing your love with Ethereum Cat Herders. Cheers.